Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the weekly podcast for people who play with needles. And this is normally where Christine would waste 5 minutes talking, making lame jokes about playing with needles and hypodermic needles and all those things. But no, you're cut off tonight because you're always doing that. So we've got a terrific group of people here. The Nordic Needle Group have joined us for this week's show. Ryan Eveleth, did I get that right? Eveleth?
Yes.
Hi, Ryan. And Kristen Braden.
Hi.
And yep, I should have tested this one ahead of time. Marianne Uradnik?
Very close. Uradnik, yes.
Uradnik. All right. And Cassie.
Well done.
Cassie Slaby or Slaby. Slaby.
Slaby.
Oh, first person.
Cassie Slaby. Okay. So Ryan.
Make you feel better, Gary usually butchers names.
Yes. So it's a specialty.
He did really well.
I'm used to it,
so. Let's see. Ryan and Christian are co-owners of Nordic Needle, and Marianne is the purchaser. And Marianne, you've been with the company for how many years?
For 32 years.
There we go. There we go. A true veteran.
What?
And Cassie.
Yeah.
And Cassie's the shop supervisor. And Cassie, you've been with the company a long time too, right?
Almost 9 years, yeah.
Okay. All right. There's your veterans right there, folks. So let's Ryan and Christian, let's just give a little background to people about Nordic Needle. I mean, it's widely known. I don't know how you operate in the needlework hobby very long without hearing about Nordic Needle. But give a little history about how this company started. I mean, this has got a pretty unique background to it.
Sure. Yeah. So it started in 1975, in June actually, June 2nd, so we kind of just had our anniversary a little bit. And it was by the previous owners, Roz Watnamo and Susan Meyer, and they were college mates at Concordia College here in Moorhead, Minnesota, and they did a little hardanger class and kind of fell in love with it and wanted more supplies, and so it kind of started with them just getting supplies for themselves and their little group at Concordia. And it blossomed, obviously, from that. And it's definitely grown, like you said. And they started actually in an old Bison Hotel in downtown Fargo. And I thought it was kind of cool because it was just in like one little tiny room, and they actually swapped janitorial responsibilities for rent there.
There we go.
And then, and they outgrew that really, really fast. And I think, gosh, that they started to even host classes. I think they did classes, and they moved to another building downtown. And then finally they kind of realized that, hey, this is getting even bigger than we can manage. And, in about 1982, they built the building that we are currently in right now. And so this building was actually built for the business. It's upstairs and downstairs. So, it's about 9,000 square feet. And when you see it from the outside, it's deceptively small. Because when we do tours here, we take them down into the warehouse, and it's like this whole other, 4,000 square foot area of just warehouse and shipping, and it's kind of like a tip of an iceberg kind of experience. But yeah, that's kind of the short cliff notes of how it got started.
That's really something. Just I love the trade janitorial work for rent. That's good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Ryan and Christian, then how is it you come to be owners?
Well, I was an employee. I've been here for going on 11 years now. And I was I started out just as a retail store clerk. And I thought, like a lot of our customers, some of our customers actually anymore, that it's a knitting shop, that they're in, knitting, Nordic Needle. It's knitting, right? So when I started way back when, I was in for a surprise for sure. I learned a lot in the first few weeks for sure. But I started doing retail, just the store clerk, and then I was picked for taking over the e-commerce development, and then that was kind of like my main duties for about 10 years. And then I was approached by the previous owners when Sue had retired several years prior to pursue her retirement, really. I mean, her deserved retirement. And so Roz was kind of left to take care of everything. And we had a manager at the time, and he actually had some family things that he had to take care of, and he ended up having to leave. And Roz was looking at actually closing the business, and I was kind of put to a fork in the roads of my life to decide if I wanted to actually take over Nordic Needle or pursue a degree at the University of Minnesota. And I decided I didn't want Nordic Needle to close, so I bought it. and that's kind of where my part of how I got into it started. And Christian's actually much newer. He bought in last year, and he can tell you a little bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually doing the IT work for Nordic Needle for about a year previous to approaching Ryan about buying into it. I didn't actually have any experience at all with I had experience with retail in the past, but nothing as far as needlework. Anything like that. I'd never done anything like that before. But I thought it was interesting, and I thought that I would be able to help to keep it going and hopefully make it bigger. And, Ryan and I have been working together very well for the past year now, about since I bought into it. I still do the IT here along with another guy that is in shipping, and he helps out with that.
And Christian also stitches now, too.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Convert.
Well, I figured if I was going to be a part of it, I was going to be, an owner of it. I wanted to learn as much as I could, not only the business side of it, but the stitching side of it as well. So.
Okay. Well, Christian, I have in my mind to have an all male, well, Christine, and then two or three male stitchers for a show. So you just got put on the list.
That'd be fun.
Yes. Yep, you're on the list.
I find it quite soothing in a way. Instead of looking at a computer screen for hours and hours a day, it's very nice to kind of get away from that. Just put the computer aside, put the phone aside, and then just concentrate on what's in your hand right there and making something. Your own handiwork, basically. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Yeah. So, Ryan, it sounds like you were the catalyst, because you guys were an early online sales. I mean, you must have been one of the earliest, if not the first, for online sales.
Right. Yeah. When we talked on the phone earlier, I looked into it a little bit more. It was actually through the Women Entrepreneurs in Business program, and the shopping cart and the website were developed in 1996. So
that is a long time ago.
Wow. Yeah. So they definitely were for very first to market on that front, for sure.
Yeah. What was that like? Because, that wasn't people's orientation to buy online. Was it just kind of a trickle of business online? And at what point there must have been a critical mass where things really started to take off, I would think.
Yeah, so they had a catalog, mail or catalog for quite a long time, and so they were used to doing the shipping and fulfillment part of it. It's just that online, once people started getting online, 96 was very early, and you're right, like people weren't necessarily thinking about commerce at that point, but they were still, Nordic Needle was still ready in the sense that they were used to volume from catalog sales, so turning it into more fulfillment for e-commerce was kind of a natural progression. But Marianne, do you recall, was there a trickle of e-commerce, or was it kind of gradual where it just got bigger and bigger?
I would say it was probably more of a not trickle because it was advertised, but it did take a while for some of the people to realize that sometimes we would just mail out orders and then they'd send us a check. Oh, and everything was handwritten of the orders. So, yeah, it was a switch on both sides that we had to learn.
But powerful that you had, at least you had the shipping part, that system was in place, because a lot of people, that's almost as much hassle as getting the order taking set up, as because when people order online, of course, they expect same day shipment for the most part. So at least you had that part. That had to, that's a big hurdle to not have to deal with.
Right. Yeah. And actually, Marianne and Chris, also Chris, another very, very long time employee, they shipped at some point.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So, yeah, lots of shared responsibilities and working on fulfillment for sure.
And I got to believe around Christmas time, things are nuts when it comes to shipping.
Actually,
the question is, what is, because most people, they have their Christmas stitching done. So what is the busy time for you guys? Or is it just
right,
year round?
Yeah, we don't really have necessarily a season. I guess we had some spikes based on when the catalog was, but those could also correlate to kind of after Christmas money too. So people are having all the gift certificates. So we get a lot more gift certificate sales during Christmas time. But you obviously know in stitching, it takes sometimes months to finish a project. So people are buying for Christmas, earlier in August or September. So we kind of have a steadiness. And then, of course, since we're international, our seasons flip-flop. So Australia is at a different season than we are. And so we're getting international business that equalizes it.
That's nice. That's nice, because then you have steady cash flow and steady business throughout the year. That helps. The accountants, anyway, appreciate that. Yeah. And then I find it interesting. The core, I mean, when you go to your website, you have all these specialty stitching areas from different countries, different areas. But is the core of your business still Scandinavian white work? Is that still the core of what you do? Is that what most people come to you for? Or has that kind of evened out and people just come to you for just about anything?
It's turned definitely. I mean, we're still obviously known for our Hardanger, and we have quite an extensive library of Hardanger publications. But we do kits in a couple different techniques, and we want to continue expanding that for sure. Cultural is obviously still a huge part of our vision and mission. We want to make sure that none of these cultural and heritage embroidery techniques are lost. And so kind of collecting as we go. But we get, lots of different people looking for lots of different things when they come here. So we're still obviously Hardanger, but I think we've definitely evolved past Hardanger specifically. But yes, it is. It's still our first love.
And Christian, do you is Hardanger what you do? What are you stitching as someone who's new to this?
Yeah. So what did I start off with? I actually started off with Huck toweling or Swedish weaving.
Whoa! Back up! What?
So yeah, Swedish weaving or on Huck towel. Have you done that before?
No, I've never heard of it. So now you got me curious here.
Oh,
nice going. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I started with that because Ryan had told me, as far as like an easy getting learning stitching, that would probably be the way to go, and I really like that, and it's very easy to start. I'll say that for all the men out there. If you want to get started in stitching something, start with a Huck towel. one of our kits. And then from that, yeah, I said, I told Ryan, I said, I would like to do something a little more difficult. She asked me if I was ready for hard anger, and I said, well, I don't know if I'm ready for it, but yeah, let's do it. So yeah, I've done a couple pieces for that as well.
Oh, I see this here. Huck, H-U-C-K, Huck Weaving.
Yep, you got it.
Oh. Christine, you need to try this.
Of course I do.
Yeah, you need to try this. Oh, this looks intriguing.
This is the part where Gary gets me to try all the new weird things.
Yes.
What a good friend.
It's a talent. Yes. It's a talent I have.
Mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Okay, for Southwest Trail Towel Kit, $10.99. Right there, Christine. I'll order it. You stitch it. There we go.
Fair enough.
That's how that's going to work. Okay, so, all right. Now, see, this is new. This is new. See, this is the trouble with these podcasts is there's just enablers on the other end all the time. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yes. Yes. So, and one of the things, as we're sitting talking, I'm kind of browsing through your website because we're talking about e-commerce. And one of the things that has been interesting to me is the idea of books versus buying patterns, right? So I'm scrolling through your books and I come across one called Shakespeare's Flowers in Stumpwork. Mm-hmm. So that one immediately caught my eye because it's all English flowers, which is near and dear to my heart for reasons that Gary knows. So this is immediately now, in addition to the thing that Gary has now put me onto that I'm going to be, I think this may be my introduction into stumpwork as well.
Ooh.
I think I've just gotten hooked and this is the book that's going to do it. Because it looks stunning. So tell me about this book because I'm completely fascinated.
Oh goodness. Do we even have one on the floor right now?
Oh, no,
Cass is gonna go grab one. Mm-hmm. But have you done any Brazilian embroidery already, Christine?
I haven't, but see, so this is the difference between Gary and I is I will jump headlong into anything. So I'm not afraid to do something I've never done before and completely fail at it. So I'll fail a couple of times and then eventually get it, and that's fine. So, and I'm looking at this. So the way you have it described is it's flowers chosen from mentions in Shakespeare's plays. So it's going to be all flowers of English countryside and Tudor England. So it's violets, musk roses, thyme.
Yeah. And it's a Jane Nicholas book, so it's going to be exquisite.
It is absolutely, just the cover of it is absolutely beautiful, and I'm completely hooked. The reason that I was alluding to earlier is that I have a tattoo which is all English flowers. So, this would be very interesting. So that might be going in my shopping cart. immediately.
I personally really enjoy stumpwork embroidery. It's very dynamic and very, you just want to touch it because it's obviously three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it never really appealed to me until I just saw this book, and now I finally get it, right? I finally get that three-dimensional aspect of it. And I think it's really from this. It's because now I'm seeing it in relation to something that I know, that I've seen in real life, and I understand what it's supposed to look like. And so now seeing it represented this way, I finally get stumpwork, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, so now I'm totally excited.
Christine,
well, that's awesome.
So we've been doing this for 12, 14 weeks, and Christine has gone from no needlework to a respectable stash already. So
right. Well, none since I was a very small girl, I would say.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's good for you. We'll keep it going.
It's research. It's research, Gary. It's research.
Yes, exactly. Now, one of the things that just in doing research for this that I did not realize you guys have is a pretty extensive educational website. I actually started looking into that, and an hour later, I forced myself to stop. So you guys, there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we talked briefly on the phone call about we have a pretty extensive newsletter mailing list, and that's been growing for years and years. And we show and tell and showcases, and we feature designers, and we feature companies sometimes too. But we also do newsletter articles on techniques or materials. And when it's on a technique or material, we end up uploading it to our educational website so that everyone can benefit from it. So that's been growing for years as well. And that's why we have the .NET site.
Yeah, it's a pretty surprising amount of information there. And you know, I just kept reading and reading and reading. And then I realized I was supposed to be doing the paying job, so I stopped. I mean, that's great, because those kinds of resources, you know, late at night when you need help, you know, that to know that that's is terrific. Yeah. Yeah. And we got away from it, but I wanted to get back to all of these cultural techniques that you guys are keeping alive. I mean, I get a sense that maybe you're kind of the core of keeping these things alive, or are these techniques practiced and active in the various countries where they originate? But I mean, what kind of role do you play in keeping? Because there's a list on your website of what 10 or a dozen different types of techniques that you guys offer product for. What is it, kind of a mission for you guys?
Yes. Yeah. It's actually part of our vision, the preservation of cultural and heritage techniques. And obviously it started with Hardanger because no one else was doing it. No one had supplies for it. And then you kind of realize that, wow, there are a lot of techniques that people are not practicing anymore, or they are practicing and they can't find anyone to teach them or any books or references for how to do them. And so that's definitely, it's rolled right into our vision, and we want to continue doing it. I mean, we only have a small, little, tiny sliver of all the cultural techniques that are in the world. And we do try and seek designers who are either learning about techniques or, you know, trying to raise funding to go visit so that they can continue to do research. And then obviously designers who are actually publishing books in other techniques, you know, like Yvette Stanton or Phyllis Maurer, where they are researching those cultures as well, so that they give you a full view of the entire history of the embroidery, as well as how to do it and what kind of supplies you can get, and even substitutions for supplies if you can't get the original supplies. So yeah, that's right up there. And we hope to continue growing that so that no culture is unrepresented eventually.
Well, that's fantastic. Cause well, as you know, we talked with Yvette Stanton, and the books that she's done, just amazing. It's like, I still remember asking her, where does she find these things? You know, just amazing techniques and the books that she puts out. And then for white work,
yes,
she's
an incredible author, and her books are phenomenal. Absolutely. I'm so excited to see what her next book is going to be about.
Yeah, the book she won't tell anybody about. Yeah, that.
Right.
Right. And then the only other one I know, and I haven't studied, is it Lucine Hoppel from Germany? If I have that name right. I follow her. She does an awful lot of white work, beautiful stuff. And I don't know, but so you guys must just scour the world looking for these designers and trying to put them on the map then.
Well, yeah. And sometimes they find us. So that helps too. Yeah, we actually just introduced a Ukrainian designer this last weekend who is creating beautiful Hardanger pieces, and she submitted for our award-winning design, and that's how we met her, not really meeting her, but by correspondence by mail, mm-hmm. and we're like, wow, this is amazing. Your stitching is incredible. And we've Instagram is pretty awesome for finding designers, believe it or not.
Yeah. No, I believe it. It's definitely, there's so many things. And then one, of course, leads to another. Because a lot of the designers will follow other designers. So it's a really good sort of, you know, it can be a little bit of a rabbit hole, because once you start following that path, then, you know, 7 hours have passed and, you know, you haven't done any of the things you wanted to do, but you've learned a lot.
Yeah, let's get Mary Ann in here and talk about purchasing, because that's gotta be a tremendous challenge to hunt down all the materials that are needed for all these specialties. Is that it gotta be a lot of fun, I would think, but quite a challenge?
Yes. I mean, well, there's a lot of the basic threads and fabrics that are used for a lot of these types of stitching. So a lot of that, it's more maybe some specific tools that would be needed, would be more the difficult thing to find.
Okay, but so most of the, almost universal with threads and ground cloth then.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's different counts and there are different weaves, I guess you could say, of some of the different, I mean, it's all pretty much an even weave fabric of the, other than, oh, let's see, what is it? The Brazilian, you don't use an even weave fabric, but a lot of the other fabrics, it's even weave. And so it would be used for a lot of the different techniques.
What do you use for Brazilian?
That it's called trigger fabric, which is probably kind of like tightly woven, because then it's more that the design is printed onto the fabric. A lot of the other ones, it's counted, and so then you count your threads to do your design, whereas with the Brazilian, the pattern is put onto the fabric, and then that's what you use as your guide for stitching.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, when we talked to Yvette, and I learned that the what is sold as 22 count Hardanger cloth is not what the original, in the fjord, what they used.
And, no. I think that's the one that they call Hardanger fabric, but there's a lot of other fabrics that are actually used for Hardanger also.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was originally stitched on linen with linen thread.
Yeah, well, that's what she talked about, and I've done just enough Hardanger to be dangerous, and but now I have to try it on linen, because. Clearly, it's a whole different beast that way. Yeah. So, Mary Ann, and then the other thing you've been.
No, it's.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. No, I couldn't hear you there for a little bit.
Oh. Well, that's okay. It really. It wasn't anything deep. Trust me.
Okay.
But now, Mary Ann, you've been around long enough that you've seen this tremendous explosion of different kinds of fibers. Fibers of all kinds and different dyeing, different types of materials. Has this just to keep up with all that? You must do a lot of research, a lot of talking to salespeople. Seems like that there's. There's quite a challenge there when it comes to purchasing material, but also a lot of fun. Just in how many years has been just this tremendous growth, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down.
No, there's always new companies that usually we start looking for the different fibers if we carry a pattern or that calls for something different that we haven't carried. And that's kind of how we start with what we will pick up. And then, because there's so many companies out there that there's no way that we could carry all of them. I guess I would be interesting at some point to just find out how many companies make hand-dyed silk fibers. because we've got several of them, and I know there's a lot of other ones out there that, you know, you just can't carry them all. But that I guess it's.
Well, that's what when I'm at my local shop, mm-hmm. you're in there for an hour, and it's a store is just full of charts and threads and cloth, and if you're paying any attention, you come to realize that with this whole store full, so many people are coming in saying, "Do you have this?" "Oh no, I don't have that." You know, but I have an entire store full of stuff. Wouldn't you like that? And then, you know, then I think of you guys with a warehouse full. It's got to be the same story.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No matter what you carry, there's always something that they want that you don't have. And we have started expanding as far as that when somebody does come in and start asking if it is a company that we order from, then we will get it for them. If it's adding a whole new company and we really aren't getting a lot of requests for it, then we'll usually try to find out as much about that fiber as we can and then try to find something that would be a close substitute.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cause I was in a different store, not the one I usually go to, and, had a chart and was looking for a particular thread, and the owner just kind of rolled her eyes and went, "Oh." Because for the one skein of thread that I wanted, she was going to have to order at least a box. And I could tell, yes. You know, I could tell it was, oh, now I'm going to have to add inventory that I may have to eat for years here for this one thing. And I saved her the hassle. I could tell it was more she wanted to do. So.
Yes. And we do try to keep color cards. We have a whole file of color cards of different kinds of threads, and so that really helps, or else going online to try to find, so that, like you said, you come in and you're looking for something and you can hopefully find something that would be a good substitute that would give the same effect.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the same exact fiber.
Mm-hmm. Are you... We hear a lot about silk threads. Have you seen mm-hmm. a lot of growth, a lot of demand for silk?
Yes, definitely. Well, you know, and probably, I mean, there's some of the silk that's been around for a long time. I think probably the hand dyed or the variegated is where there's been more growth. Is, you know, actually both in fabrics and in the threads, that's the ones where there seems to be the most, more options that come out.
Mm-hmm. So you are seeing a lot more demand for silk in general, but,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at with specialty threads like, you know, rayons and those kind unusual threads, is that still a pretty small part of what you guys end up handling? Or, I mean, it seems like that gets used a lot.
Yes, with the Brazilian embroidery, those are all rayon threads. And we have, you know, I guess definitely hundreds yes. of them. And they come in different weights. And that, you know, yeah, that one is still going strong. And then there are the metallic threads that are like from Krennic, and there's linen thread that we have, we're selling a lot of. And then your staples, your DMC cottons and in all the different weights. And then there are other companies that have the cottons, but that are the variegated, the hand dyed. So there's some.
A quarter of your warehouse is DMC threads, I got to believe. I mean, that has to be your something you must keep in stock at all times.
Oh, we do. Yes, we do try to keep all of the DMC stocks or threads in stock. But as far as the total amount of thread that we have in the building, that's
DMC is pretty small.
I would go with maybe 25% of the fibers that we have here are the DMC threads.
Really? That surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You always want to have those in stock, definitely. But then there are so many of the other fibers that are being asked for. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of funny because it's like there's a pattern that comes out and all of a sudden there's just certain colors that are not your normal big sellers. And all of a sudden you can't keep them in stock. And it's almost like you can, when you're ordering, you can go, oh, yes, that pattern must be really hitting it off. Because you notice certain ones that come through and then it goes, but you never know how long that streak is going to run.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's got to be the tricky part is, yeah, all of a sudden there's mm-hmm. no more interest and you're sitting there holding a whole bunch of thread. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you know,
somebody will just order a really large quantity. And I think that's one of the other more difficult parts especially with the hand dyed, is dye lots. So you might have 10 skeins of a fiber in stock, but if they aren't the same dye lot and somebody orders 5 of them, then you still have to reorder more so that you can fulfill that order.
Right. Oh, I can't imagine keeping track of all that. Well, to say that DMC threads only make up about 20 or 25% of all of the threads that you carry really paints a picture of what a tremendous number of and range of fibers exists. If DMC, which is the staple for just about everyone, is not even half of what you have, it's kind of mind blowing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is. I guess that's basic, and then you get all the other ones.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy. So okay, I sent this question in. I don't know if you had an answer for it. What are some of the craziest mm-hmm. things you've seen in your years?
Okay. Well, that one I did. Yeah. First of all, one I remember is, you know, you kind of realize what kind of dedication some of our customers have to Nordic Needle. There was a lady from Israel, and her son was working in New York City. So she was coming over to visit her son, and since she was that close, stayed 2 nights overnight in Fargo so that she could spend the whole day at Nordic Needle. So that was quite a, you know, when we're here, we don't realize, you know, kind of how other people see us when, you know, out other places.
Right.
And then the other one that I had kind of thought about was back when there was a TV show, How to Be a Millionaire.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That with Regis Philbin coming? Where
yes.
that show first
yes.
came? Yes. Well, they, right at the very beginning of carrying that show, at the end of the show, they put an 800 number on the screen for people to call if they wanted to be a contestant. They put up our 800 number.
Oh, no.
We had thousands of calls. It was like our customers couldn't get through. So we finally had to change the message when people called the number so that it said, you are now calling Nordic Needle. If that is not who you want to talk to, please hang up. And, you know, so that was quite a zoo.
Oh, no. What are the odds, too? Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that. I think it took them 2 or 3 days to get that number down. And then, of course, all the people, you know, people didn't notice it right away because they couldn't get through to find out that it was the wrong number.
Yeah. Your number's written on a million notepads by phones all over the.
Exactly.
Oh, jeez. Okay, we got to talk to Cassie here, but don't go away because is there one product in all your years that stands out that you think is just one of the most brilliant inventions for needlework? Is there one? And you can't say a hoop.
You know. A needle and a scissor.
Okay.
You know, and actually, I mean, I hate to say, but a good scissor.
I was just going to say. Yeah.
That, you know, it's the basic, but it can make so much difference, especially if you're doing hardanger or any of the other techniques that take, you know, where you have to be cutting threads. Cutting the fabric threads, I guess I should say. Then you just, a good sharp with a pointed needle. I mean, no, scissor.
Right.
Okay. I'll attest to that.
Oh.
and they'll know why.
Okay.
Because the,
tell the story.
The
come on.
Yeah. When I, was first doing the, hardanger piece, it was a doily, like a kind of a bigger piece, but it was still a basic one. And I was at home. I didn't have a nice sharp scissors that I could use. I mean, I had some scissors around the house, but nothing, you know, nice and sharp like that. And so I went to my toolbox to look, and I found a wire cutter. like an automotive wire cutter.
Yes.
I thought, well, maybe this will work. And well, sure enough, it worked. And that's why I used that up until I think it was a Saturday, like at night. And I could have come in and bought one, of course, but we were closed. And so I thought, well, I'll just wait till Monday. And so I used that wire cutter to cut up my first parts of the hard iron piece.
See, I find that very respectable. I think that's, you know, that's using the tools that you have available.
Yep, exactly.
Right, Garrett, doesn't that sound like something I would do? It really does.
Oh, yeah. When he told that, I thought, oh, yeah, Christine's all about that. That's, yeah.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. I'm listening to this thinking, I don't understand what's wrong with this story. You know, as long as there's no risk of rust getting onto the white fabric, then you're all good.
Yep, it was clean.
I don't see the problem here.
It worked, so.
Exactly.
And you use a cross-cut saw to cut your cloth too, right?
Yeah, right. That was next, but you know. Yeah.
Gary, that's a jigsaw. Let's just do this.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. Fine. All right. Hey, Marianne, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yes. No, this was fun.
Yeah. Cassie, shop supervisor, Fargo, North Dakota, needlework shop. Now, I got to believe that you have a whole lot of people in the area who are in and out all the time, because there must be a pretty good stitching community up there if Nordic Needle's within driving distance. What's a shop like in Fargo, North Dakota?
Yes, there actually is a fairly big stitching community in Fargo, North Dakota. We also get a lot of travelers, too, that come through the state, like Marianne's story of people will plan a destination across the United States or across the sea, and they literally will stop in Fargo just to see the store and everything. And even people that live in town here, some of them forget about us, or they haven't been in for like 30 years. So it's fascinating all the different customers and people you get to meet when they walk through that front door.
So who's come the farthest to visit the shop?
Oh, wow.
The lady from Israel?
Yeah, Australia.
We've had lady from Israel. We've had a couple from Australia.
We've had
several different countries for when we've done our retreat. I can't remember exactly where she was from, but her husband. Romania. Yeah, Romania. Okay. We had a woman from Romania. Her husband literally set everything up, put her on a plane, and said, "Do whatever the Nordic Needle ladies tell you. Don't question them."
Wow. Oh, what fun. So, and of course, language a problem there, but common, you know, you don't really need much language for stitching.
She was actually able to speak English fairly well. It's when you get some of those with a little heavier accent, you're kind of like, okay, we need to start drawing pictures, just picking up product. Like, okay, where in your project are you? Just point and it's okay. You know, if you have that heavy accent or you're not entirely sure what you're trying to say, it's usually, okay, well, figure this out. What project are you on? Where are you? Show me what you need. We'll get through this.
Wow, that's not every shop gets to experience that. That's pretty neat. Yeah. Classes? Do you do classes?
Yes. I've actually taught several of our beginning embroidery classes and one beginning cross stitch class. This fall we're looking at doing a two-part black work class. And then we have many different ladies here that have taught several different classes. Ryan and one of the other ladies here, Chris, just finished doing several rounds of a beginning hard anger class. So we go all over the spectrum. If we have a demand for it, we set it up, we look into it, and we list it through the Moorhead Community Ed and hope we get a good turnout.
And I read somewhere, I should have made a note, but you have some community outreach effort too, to spread the word?
Yep. We are currently putting together a library for people to come and look at older books that we've had and see if they can do and other techniques. It's a lot of books that really haven't been in print for quite some time, and they've been donated by a lot of local women, and usually it's, oh, family members have died and I don't stitch, none of my friends stitch, I don't want to just throw them out, can you do something with them?
Oh, that's got to be a treasure trove then.
Yeah, it is. And we also get a lot of people that come in and donate fabric and threads, and we'll actually donate them to the Y and a couple different women's programs.
Hmm. That's neat that you're able to do that. That's great. Yeah. What as we were putting this all together, what was going through my mind is you have, I assume it's downstairs where the warehouse is. You have just about everything under the sun in the building, but then you only got so much shop space. So how do you sort that all out? I mean, because the opportunity to display everything, but there's no room. So how do you work through that?
We actually have most of the stuff that is in the basement up in the store as well. It's known as backstock. What's in the warehouse is a lot of just extra stuff. Cause yes, I only have so much room in the front store.
Cassie is a wizard with merchandising. She finds homes for everything, and it's pretty amazing actually how she does it. Yes.
Cause yeah, we get like 20 new threads in a week, every 2 weeks, depending on what ordering's doing, or if we have orders for special order threads, and as people have been ordering them, we've been picking them up and adding them in. So a lot of stuff gets rearranged to try and accommodate everything. So it's a fairly impressive stock, and the basement does run out, so they do actually run upstairs and start stealing from my stash. And I'll make fun of them every now and again and be like, why didn't you stock up better?
Uh-huh. I can see that happening, yep. And then a customer walks in and you thought you had six of this item and you don't. Yeah.
Now you're down to like zero.
Yep. Do you have this? Yeah, it's right over here. It was.
No, it's not.
Are you see in the shop, especially with all the travelers, are you seeing trends in interest changing?
A lot more people are looking for a little more patterns that are more like kitschy, and it depends on if it's for a specific event or not. And a lot of people, they have these ideas for patterns in their head, but it's not something that's ever been created yet. And of course, most of them are like, well, I don't have that creative ability. Can't you just show me exactly what I want? No, because it doesn't exist yet, but I can maybe, you know, lead you in a direction. But yeah, it's the trend is a lot of wedding stuff right now, and they want something very specific. Otherwise, silks have been taking off. A lot of people that pass through, and if they're needle pointers, they really do like using a lot of our silks for filling in, because it goes so much nicer than some of the cottons for them.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to believe that a lot of people who visit, they place an order and you guys ship it to their home so they don't have to haul it?
Yep.
Yeah.
We actually also have people call about at least three days in advance and go, oh yeah, my son or whoever is going to be coming in picking it up, so they can do their in-store pickup, and we're like, here you go. And then it's out the door right then and there.
Probably one of the most unique shops, I would think, in the hobby, just because of the background, and you know, when people view Fargo, North Dakota as a destination, that's pretty unique. Yeah. Yep. That's fun.
Yep.
That's fun. So what kind of stitching do you do? Hardanger?
No.
No, I won't do that.
I tried 8 years ago and it didn't work out. So I went to cross stitch. Then I learned embroidery just to teach the class. And then I decided to branch out from there. And within this past year, I've learned how to do black work. And I'm on, I think, my fifth piece now, because I just love it so much.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that stuff's beautiful. That's there's a unique challenge there, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, because it's figuring out the best path for the design and how to make it look just as pretty on the front as on the back. But every now and again, you have that design where you're like, the back can just be a mess. It's fine.
Yeah, no, that's what I've never done black work, but every piece I've seen, I can see that challenge is finding the right path so that it doesn't, you know, the cross threads don't show up. Yeah, that's fun. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's of course, time's running out here.
It's about that time.
Every time it happens. I wanted to talk about whoever's speaking about this, the is it Broderie or Broderie Box Club? What is that all about? Is that a fiber club?
Yes, it's a Broderie Box. So Broderie is Norwegian for embroidery. So it's just called the Broderie Box, and it's a monthly box club, subscription club, and it started with, hey, we have a lot of fibers, as Marianne talked about. And we realized that a lot of people do get kind of stuck in using the same thing, and so we wanted to create a club that introduced them to new fibers and new threads. And that's kind of how it got born. And it has fibers, usually like five or six different threads, and embellishments sometimes, and tools. So you get to try out new tools that you might not have ever tried before. And then we also give them a complimentary blog post that tells them, right now we're doing astrological signs. And so we do some lore about the astrological sign and information about that. And then we tell them thread by thread and item by item what is in their box, with usage tips and background on it, like what is it good for, what do you use it for. And then we also give them free pattern and project ideas, as well as coupons. So it's kind of a all-encompassing kind of pique your interest fiber club.
Well, that's fun. So it's not just pay some money and get a bundle of fibers that you may or may not ever use. It much more than that. That's fun.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Annual subscription?
You can do annual, but those are very short windows. So usually we open up an annual subscription in November, and then once that closes out, then it's month by month. And because we have to give so much time to our purchasers for purchasing these things, because some of these fibers are coming from very far away overseas and they take a while to get here. So we have subscriptions open the first week of the previous month. So we're going to have August subscriptions coming up in the first week of July.
There you go, Christine. Right there.
Yep.
Yep.
Got it.
Okay. As long as you're making notes, that's all we care about. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we talked to Yvette, she talked about her, I think it was her first Hardanger thing, that she won a competition with you guys. Do you still do
yes.
the competition?
We do. Yes. I think we've only had one lapse in 2014. Otherwise it's been going since 1979. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I am in the works of compiling the book already, and it's slated to come out next month. So we have the pieces here. There are going to be 10 winners, 6 actual award winners, and then 4 honorable mentions. So 10 pieces in the book in totality, and they're always beautiful to see. And this year we have winners from Japan, New Zealand, Canada, and some from the U.S. too. So it's pretty amazing. It's very international.
Now, when you talk about a book, are we talking just about pictures of the winners, or do you also offer the charts so others can do whatever the winning
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, so it's basically you get a biography of the designer, and then we have charts of the pieces and close-up photos of the pieces as well. I mean, it's meant to be kind of a masterclass book for those who want to stitch the pieces. And some of them are obviously, like, it would take years to do them. They're just so exquisite. But at the same time, I mean, they're definitely aspiration pieces for sure.
Mm. So, Christian, when you finish that towel, then you're diving in, right?
What's that?
I said, when you finish that towel, you're diving in with your wire cutters, right?
Oh yeah. Yep. You know
okay, just making sure.
Pieces, yeah.
Just making sure. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, yep. So, folks, this has been fun. Wow, what an operation! Now I gotta find my way to Fargo, North Dakota.
I need to find you some projects too.
Yeah, because I need more projects.
I can't be the only one carrying that. Yeah.
Well, see, the interesting thing is, I work for a magazine, and our printer is in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And
That's very interesting, because one of my larger manufacturers is also in Eden Prairie.
Really?
So it's very likely. It's very likely. In fact, I have been meaning to go for about 2 years, and I've just not made it up there.
Because that's...
So I could very well end up in Eden Prairie at any moment.
Because that's what... Is it 100 miles or an hour from you guys?
A little further than that.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, it's about 3.5 hours from there.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It's worth the drive.
Yeah. Well, if you're going all the way to Minnesota, then...
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. You should just stop by.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For sure.
Okay. All right, Christine, we got to work out a road trip here.
Oh, I can absolutely do it. I can just say the word, and I will find a reason to have to go to either Eden Prairie or Chaska.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Chaska is beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, that isn't as far away.
No. Yeah, okay, then Chaska it is. I'll find a reason.
Okay. All right, now I got to come up with some lame reason to go see a printer I've only seen once. Okay. We can do that. We can do that. Uh-huh. Yep. Hey, folks, thanks for taking the time, staying after work, and doing this with us. We really appreciate it. This has been fun.
Thank you very much. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been really fun. Thank you so much.
All right, and thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week.